This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Jeff, I haven't heard your thoughts on this, and I'm very curious. Jeff Hathorne with Pomp and Joe here. Social media's biggest loser, Malzie, is brought to you by Awaken 180. Visit them at Awaken180weightloss.com in the 50-minute mark. Brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township. Why is this Aaron Rodgers thing taking so long, and do you consider this to be a foregone conclusion that he's coming here?
I think that there is a deal in place that he just hasn't signed.
So an agreement?
Yes.
Why? Because he wants to announce it.
I honestly believe on the McAfee thing next week. I have no idea why.
If he doesn't, you have more trepidation?
It might be truly that he needs to walk out of a dark cave and have a spirit tell him to sign with it. I don't know. Trying to get into his head is...
I mean, the McAfee thing, like he's having this live event in Pittsburgh next Wednesday. This isn't like, you know, Aaron Rodgers does a little guest spot for a couple bucks. This was a huge deal for him and for McAfee. I mean, they're like tied at the hip. That's a giant partnership, Aaron Rodgers and McAfee. And it wouldn't surprise me one bit, Bob.
No,
if that's going to happen next Wednesday as part of a big unveiling at that McAfee event.
If they wanted it to be a surprise, we wouldn't be talking about it. I think if you go there, you're not going to be surprised if Aaron Rodgers
shows up.
I would be more surprised if he doesn't show up and there's no announcement.
It almost seems too obvious, though. Like Aaron likes to be that guy that you can't really tell where he's coming from or what he's thinking. And like that makes too much sense. But I'll say this for Pat.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him. When this first came up, when that leaked tweet came up that he responded to you about.
Yeah.
That was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I tweeted something and he responded to me, and that was the zeitgeist.
About
zeitgeist.
What?
That was zeitgeist.
The Zeitgeist, Reader's Zeitgeist trying to digest
I'm forgetting all this. Fill me in what happened.
That's when it was first said about Aaron and coming on his show and potentially saying that he was going to join the Steelers.
Oh.
And the beauty of that was he was preempted on ESPN that day and was YouTube only, which means how many eyes did he get to go to YouTube because that was floated out there? And now how many people is he going to get to this event with the thought process that maybe Aaron Rodgers is going to show? I mean, it's genius for Pat.
Right.
I just don't know. I don't know.
It's almost the only thing that makes sense right now. What else is he waiting for?
I have no idea.
Meantime, I have to remove a Belfont snorkel label from Bruce Feldman, the Athletic writer who did the mock draft where they take Jackson Dart, the Steelers, at 21. Tried to get him on the show today. He never got back to me. I accused him of giving me the Belfont snorkel, but he has emailed me, Bob, which I'm sure you're heartened by. He said, "Hi, Joe. Just seeing this now. I could today if you have any time left. If not, I'd be happy to do it tomorrow." I said, "How about noon Monday? Because that's when Bob comes back, and I think he's going to do it then."
That'll be great. And you're going to tell him I'm sorry that I talked about you on the radio the way I did, forcing you to come on this show in almost guilt-like fashion.
But I love him.
He's really good.
He's really good. Yeah.
And because of the Jackson Dart pick, yes.
Now that's what this is all about.
If
he had said bad things about Jackson Dart, he would not be on this program.
Yeah, no invite. Jeff, did Cabali fall asleep next to Tomlin the other day at the owners' meetings? Was he drunk, or was this just a ploy to get more hits for Twitter and McAfee?
I don't think it was any of them.
Okay.
I think it's Mark. Mark's, I mean, I, I've been around him so much in these news conference settings that when it starts to get like, oh my gosh, he's saying the same thing. It was day two. He's repeating some of the things he was already asked. And I think that's Mark's face of like, oh. Now,
all right.
He, unlike most people, doesn't hide his emotion, which is part of the charm of Mark. It just shows on his face. And it, unfortunately for him, his former colleague decided
to
move his camera a little bit. And
is there a little tension there, Bob, between DeFabo and Cabali, or is there now?
I don't know. I don't know about you guys, but...
But the attention would go to DeFabo's timeline, not to Mark's.
Right.
Because Mark didn't tweet it out.
Right.
So people would think, well, Mark did it for him to get hits.
If you're Cabali and you fall asleep next to Tomlin or pretend to, you know that's getting out on social media.
You know how many pictures or how much video I have with Mark making some kind of weird face in the background?
You buying it, Bob? Where do you stand on this
today? Yeah, I honestly told him yesterday, I don't think he fell asleep for sure. I think it was just a moment. He was probably tired. Somebody clicked, and Mike clicked
that
right at the right time.
Here's that cliche again, like, oh. And he just,
yeah,
his face was
captured. I hear that. What's cooking? Brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly. Less than a minute left, Jeff. What was your prediction for the Pirates this year, and how are you feeling after seven games? How many wins did you have them pegged
76.
For? Yeah.
And I feel like that's the path that we're on, is 76.
Me too. I said 79. But there's a couple things that could change it. One real quick is O'Neill Cruz becoming a superstar.
Yeah.
Do you think that might happen?
I mean, he's shown some flashes. Obviously, he has some things to do on the field in the defensive side. But
yeah, I was telling Limits, I don't care about that anymore. Give me 40-40.
But the fact that he can go opposite field.
Yes.
That obviously the power is there. That what happens on the defensive side hasn't affected his offense.
I think that's a big
plus.
He's
the difference maker. I mean,
he should be.
Reynolds is your best, hitter, but he's the difference
maker. This guy needs to be your best hitter. He needs to have a 950 OPS with 35 homers.
He needs to make pitchers fear him so other guys get opportunities. Then those guys need to capitalize.
Thank you, Jeff. Good night, Bob.
Good night, guys.
Good night, Limits.
Have a nice one.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Say good night to Bob and Limits.
Good night, Bob. Good night, Jeff. Who were you speaking to?
I don't know.
All right.
We did it all, didn't we?
Hey, you're always well-dressed, but we didn't know we were talking to a GQ model today. What's that all about?
Yeah. Jeez. I don't know. I'm going to get some flack in the locker room. I know that. I'm not looking forward to that. I didn't know what GQ was until the offer came, so glad I did it, I think. I mean, how'd I look? You guys think I look good? Yeah, sweet.
Livy and Rue look better, I think, but you did okay.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, that's what she does. So, yeah. It was fun. It was very fun. It was on the one day in, like, a million years that it snowed in Baton Rouge. So it kind of worked out perfectly. We got some sweet pictures, but that is not my sphere. Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see if I do more of those, but it was a fun day.
Paul Skeens talking about being in GQ with Livy Dunn. And I don't know, do I want to call BS on our guy, Paul Skeens?
He knows who GQ is.
Yes!
What GQ is.
How do you not know what GQ is?
Also, I think he's going to catch some flack from Livy. He's a pretty good gymnast, too. He's like, oh, that's what she does. That's all she does.
He might catch some flack for that. You're right.
He knew what GQ was. He also got paid.
Oh, yeah. The reason I say...
Is GQ big? Like we knew. Like, it was big whenever we were growing up.
Yes.
Like, you knew what GQ was because it was, like, the only thing. Now there's so many other outlets. Maybe he didn't know what it was.
That's a good question because my immediate response naturally is, oh, yeah. But I don't know. Are we doing the magazine thing big time these days?
I didn't know it was a thing.
That's not shocking.
Well, you didn't know that Pitt's in the ACC.
Didn't know Pitt was in the ACC.
I know you did.
Pat.
Let it go.
I'm just kidding.
Pat.
Let it go.
I mean, GQ has 1.3 million followers on Twitter. That's not a lot, actually.
No.
We need to do producer GQ around here. You get Bechtold in his baggy ball shorts. You get Joel Nelson in his Penn State t-shirt, his long hair, and his backwards cap. Who's the best dressed of all the producers? I mean, Donnie's svelte. He's got the beard. He's looking good right now. He's a strong dude.
Good things. I don't know if it's best dressed, but like he has good material.
He's had a girlfriend the longest.
Yeah.
I think that has something to do with it. Callis, in a couple of months, he could be walking in here looking like an Adonis because he's got a girlfriend who can help dress him.
Best dressed, that is a tough.
Shawn Myers, he always looks professional.
I don't know. No, I think he might be last.
Yeah, Bechtold will be wearing.
He wore M1 shorts the other day.
And you know what it is?
That's a value pick.
He'll wear like a Michigan State Spartans green shirt and then North Carolina blue shorts. Like nothing ever matches. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm some sort of like fashion expert, but we're making fun of them right now. We might need to do this. We might need to get Ben Tenuto on this. A little GQ fashion
shoot.
Now that
guy's good dressed. Well dressed.
Yes.
Yes.
He's a good dresser.
And he's got the Riz.
Yes.
As the kids say. My phone is blowing up right now. Is this? No. Thought it was going to be Bechtold bitching about us ripping his fashion sense. I've also not seen any of these guys, apart from like hanging out at bars or at work. And yeah. We have a very weird job. So like, people walk in here, you're wearing sports clothes, wearing hoodies, you're wearing shorts. So I don't know what they look like in their everyday. Like when they're trying to impress a lady, like are they?
Yeah.
I don't know. But all of us are like, at least I think, are like Paul Skeens in that, not that we've been in GQ, but we've all had to go through these like family photo shoots, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where you don't want to be there. Right. And you're trying to get the dog to look and the baby to look and your five-year-old to look. And you're just like.
You're going to call BS on this. I have not. We've not done family photos.
No.
No. I lie. We did it at the beach one time. It was horrible.
Did you all wear white?
We all had.
That's the thing. Everyone wears white at the beach.
I was so miffed. Because I'm like, I just don't want to do this right now.
You're sweaty.
Oh, it was hot out. The kids were like not having it. And, you know, my brother-in-law is like a professional photographer. So he had it all set up. And like, you have to pause because it's like a remote, you know, countdown.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's tough. Man. That's tough.
It's a long afternoon.
So we did do it. We haven't done like professional, like. Pay for them, have to go do it.
We've done it for each kid on their, when they were born. We've done it for each kid on their first birthday. We did it for my five-year-old when she turned five. Big picture family. Mm. Actually, my family and I, we did it when I was growing up, and we all wore, my God, white turtlenecks, and then with jeans, barefoot, because of course, looked like we're in a friggin' cult.
It's a young mountaineer.
Awful. And then there was another same photo shoot where we wore all that same stuff, and then we each wore matching leather jackets.
This sounds just so 90s.
Yeah, it is 90s.
Late 90s.
And we had nothing to do with this. It hung up in the lobby of our doctor's office for like 14 years.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
It's like, all right, everybody, come on in. Get your throat swabbed. Here are the whites.
You have these? You still have the pictures? You got to share those.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sharing.
Were you guys overall kids? Like, wear overalls when you were kids?
My daughter wore overalls yesterday.
I was a big overalls kid. My mom dressed me like I was.
Were you chopping wood in the backyard?
No, my mom, big turtleneck, big side part. Like, it was.
I had the side part.
Were you a bowl
too.
Cut? You have a bowl cut?
Of course I did.
Doran's going to be like, why didn't you ask me if I had a bowl cut?
Yep. I did not.
Bowl cut. Oh, man. Whoever thought that was a good idea?
There are going to be things that we're wearing and doing right now they're going to look back on 20 years and go, why the hell did they do that?
I look at pictures of us when we were in college. We were wild dressing. Like, we were, like, everything was baggy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Real baggy.
It's wild looking.
Remember the Adidas Velour jumpsuit from...
oh, my gosh. What bowl game was that?
From the Sun Bowl.
Oh.
It's fitting that we had a Velour jumpsuit and lost 3-0.
Literally the worst bowl game in history of bowl games.
That's a blue-collar bowl game and not necessarily a blue-collar jumpsuit.
Speaking of, like, 90s, your thoughts on Val Kilmer?
We talked about it yesterday. So Crowley asked who was the best Batman because Val Kilmer was Batman. I think he had a great career, but...
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
He was great as Doc Holliday.
Great.
Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Real
that
genius.
That caught me off guard. I didn't realize he was as sick as he was.
What got him the sickness?
He was real sick in the new Top Gun. Like they have minutes. Yeah.
I didn't know.
You said you saw the new Top Gun. He's in it.
No, I know that. I didn't know he was sick.
He looked sick in the new Top Gun.
He's old-ish.
65.
He's the same age as Tom Cruise.
Look at how I'm aging. What do you think I'm going to look like at 65? I don't go to the movies and go, oh, that guy looks sick. Except for, what was the one that Christian Bale was in? That guy looked sick. I think he did it on purpose.
He did. He lost a bunch of weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was that an American something or other? Hustle?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
What's the one where he had... where he was sick?
The biggest story by far, though, is what Garofalo said there. It's another move by Aaron Rodgers where he's doing reconnaissance work on the Steelers. First, it was picking to come here. He invited himself to meet with the Steelers. And now it's connecting with DK Metcalf, his number one target, and having a throwing session in Los Angeles. My read on this soap opera right now, as things stand, is that Rodgers is going to end up here. And I'm now trying to figure out what is in it for him or why he does not want to sign the deal right now. Like, what is beneficial for him to not put his name on a piece of paper yet? Like, is it because he does think he wants to sign here, but there's always the off chance the Vikings circle back or something else happens, and so he wants to keep that alive for as long as he can? Or is it he doesn't want to go through some of the off-season minutia, and even though it's quote-unquote voluntary, if he's not technically under contract, he can avoid all of that and then get involved later? Because there's some clips from Tomlin that I'll play in a little bit where not only what he said, but the way he answered the questions made me think that he is at least under the impression Tomlin is acting like Aaron Rodgers is going to be his quarterback.
I don't think that it's the second thing where he doesn't want to go through stuff. I think if he was sufficiently enthusiastic about a team, he would do all that. I think it's the first one. I think it's something that probably happens in like dating situations where if you're dating somebody but it's casual, both sides might be like saying, "Eh, we don't need to make this serious," because they're both quietly holding out hope that something better comes
so
along.
So he's in the friends with benefits stage with the Steelers right now?
Yeah, and
now?
He's just saying, "I don't know, maybe we could be, you know, maybe we could be together." But in the back of his mind, he's wondering maybe if there's somebody more desirable who suddenly becomes available.
So, hey, I probably will play football this year. Not 100%, but it's more probable than doubtful.
Exactly.
And so if I'm going to pick a wide receiver to throw with, I know DK Metcalf lives in California. There's a chance I end up playing with him, so why not get the band together?
But the longer he drags this out, the greater the chance is that like somebody... just, I mean, people can get hurt working out all the time.
It's just,
and he would then jump on with that team if he thought it was a better landing
spot. It's such a tease. It is the ultimate tease. And
is it? Oh, wait a minute. Is it though? Because it would be a tease if he was like an elite level quarterback that, dragging this
let
out.
Let me finish my point. I was going to say this is the ultimate tease, and the chick is just not that hot. She's just not that, you know, dime or 10 or whatever, that you're like, yeah, I know she's playing mind games with me. Yeah, I know she's screwing around with me. Yeah, I know she's probably talking to somebody else on the side, but it's worth it because I've never been with the girl who looks like her or acts like her or does the things she does. So I'm just going to deal with it. He's 41 years old. This is not Pam Anderson from Baywatch. This is Pam Anderson from that movie she was just in a few months ago. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but she's now gone the route. I respect this, actually, where she's like, yeah, I'm not going to play like the plastic surgery arms race anymore.
Yeah, I do respect that.
And I'm not going to like color my hair. I'm not going to put makeup on it. I'm just going to be me. And so,
you're saying instead of Pam Anderson from Baywatch, they're getting that Nick Nolte mugshot where his hair's going all over the place?
It's just, yeah, it's just not worth it, man. He's toying
it
with
them. It is to them, though, and that's the problem. That's like the whole story here, Pony. It's not worth it. I think even his like supporters would say, yeah, he's not like that guy anymore. But if you're the Steelers, you've made it so where he kind of is for you. And you're going along with this whole
situation.
But if
people, and I know it's different because... I think even though you said Ayuk wasn't worth the money, you did think that if you put Ayuk on the Steelers, he was eons better than Van Jefferson and the other schmoes that they had vying for those snaps on the depth chart.
Yes.
In this case, it's not an open shut case. It's not universally thought that Aaron Rodgers makes the Steelers better. It's very much a lightning rod debatable conversation. Mm-hmm. So I don't think people, like, everyone was pissed at Ayuk and mad at me as part of that. Mm-hmm. But I do think, because of the way this has gone down, if he does choose to retire or not play, I actually think people are going to be more pissed at the Steelers.
Because they let themselves be dealt with.
And they let
this.
It happen twice in a row. It's like this whole thing about, you know, when you have a job and you've done it for a considerable amount of time, the experiences that don't work out, you're supposed to twist those into positives, thinking, all right, well, how do I make sure I don't look like a complete imbecile again here? How do I make sure that what just happened doesn't happen again? And if it with a player who had, like, Ayuk at least is a little bit of an unknown because he's not a public figure like Aaron Rodgers is. So he leaves you at the altar. He's a runaway bride. Well,
but you had no track record of his to make you think he was a flake like that.
Yes, with Aaron Rodgers, you absolutely know that.
The track record is in big flashing marquee lights. It's like, this is what this guy does.
Yeah, there's
he
like a warning.
This.
There's like a siren going off. This is boo, boo, beware.
That's a nice siren there.
And you're still doing it.
This is what he likes to do. Like, anybody that knows anything about him knows at least this one thing. He likes being front and center and having attention very much on his terms. And they are allowing it again. And I think it makes them look
so weak. Is Tomlin really
desperate.
That stupid then? Because he sounds like he's very comfortable with the situation, and it comes off as, and we'll play the audio, it comes off as, I know more than you know. Like, yeah, of course, to the outside
I'm
world.
I'm privy to things that would change your mind if you knew them.
Exactly. Well, I mean,
I don't think you ever can feel that way with Rodgers, though. I just don't think that there should be an expectation that you really know what's going on in this guy's head. That's the whole point. Five people or four people might know what he's thinking at a given time. The guy who's paying him seven figures to go on his radio show or his YouTube show, his ESPN show, isn't even one of them, it sounds like. He's got his very close circle of random confidants. And I doubt Tomlin has been allowed into the circle. Tomlin's just the guy who winked at him when he made, you know, called the timeout.
Well, then that just speaks to how little they thought of everybody else who was available that they've allowed for this to happen then. That he really did not have much respect for Justin Fields' game at all. He was fed up with Russell Wilson. In his defense, I was too. The other free agent crops of quarterback didn't tickle his fancy whatsoever. And the idea of giving up considerable assets and making it worth the Rams' while to trade Matthew Stafford never really interested him enough to do that. Even Geno Smith. You could add Geno Smith for a third-round pick. I'll tell you right now, you put Geno Smith on this team, he's a top 15 quarterback. He either led the league in passing yards last year or was very close. And we know he can get the ball to DK Metcalf.
And he's used to playing behind spotty offensive lines, and he makes it work anyway.
And he wouldn't have broken the bank in terms of how much you had to pay him.
He would have been an exciting guy to watch.
And you're not locked in long-term with him because of the way the contract is structured. I mean, there's a lot of good there. But no, they'd rather wait for Aaron Rodgers to give them the thumbs up here. He probably is saying the things that they want to hear. Or maybe, actually, I can't even say that. Maybe he is saying, yeah, like, this is all good, but I need time. And I'm still going to investigate and do my research on you as an organization. But that's the most I can say or the most I can do right now.
Mike's got SOS. He's got shiny object syndrome. Aaron Rodgers is a shiny object still at 41 years old. He's a name. He's a baseball card. And he still has a great arm. He does. I will not denigrate him and say he's completely washed or anything. The arm still plays. The brain still plays when he's like looking at a defense. But Mike's attracted to the name, the shiny object, the fact that it's Aaron Rodgers. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's been there, done that. Mike Love's been there, done that. But you talked about how he got fooled. They got fooled twice in a row with Ayuk and now Rodgers. Like, as far as just they're being played like this. Didn't Mike say a lot of the same things that you would imagine he'd probably say are positives about Rodgers when he was courting Russell Wilson and getting Russell Wilson? He's got experience that you can't teach. He's been to the top of the mountain. He's played in the big games. That's all the stuff that like I value as a coach, and he's a guy that can impart that wisdom and shared experience onto our guys. How did that turn out? So poorly that you rightly didn't want him back. I'll even defend him. You and I both, even though I said I would rather have Fields just because it'd be sort of interesting to see how it progressed, neither of us thinks Justin Fields is on the verge of some breakout.
No, I don't think so.
But it's just the fact that you are allowing this to drag on the way that it's dragging on that I think from an optics perspective looks pretty ridiculous.
So I'm just detecting from the way you're talking about this that you do not put two and two together and think that the Metcalf throwing session means that Rodgers is going to sign here.
I still think it's more likely than not that he does. I don't think it makes it like a guarantee. I don't think it's a smoking gun.
How about you, Don? When you saw that, where you're like, well, I know he's dragging this thing on, but this is more proof that Aaron Rodgers is going to be the Steelers' starting quarterback?
It does seem like the road leads to Rodgers being the quarterback next season. But like you guys said, you can't put a for sure thing on this guy. It's like the saying that Sting always had in wrestling.
What's that?
With this guy, the only thing for sure is that nothing's for sure.
That's right. Have you guys ever seen one of those pictures of like a long road in the desert where it like looks like it goes down and then back up and it's like way off in the distances as far as you can see? It's miles away. It feels like that endpoint miles away is Rodgers to Steelers, and we're still sitting at the beginning of the picture, and we got to go through all of this at like 30 miles an hour.
The other thing about all the steps that Rodgers is taking now, if he ends up saying, you know what, I'm good, I don't want to play for you guys, I do think it makes the Steelers, not just because they got strung along, but I also think it's going to make them look bad because it's going to show
they're not close.
That someone who has seen a lot of football and played a lot of football took some copious measures in time to look into them.
He
just
audited
the
franchise and didn't like what he saw.
Yeah. I'm better off without you guys.
You know what it's like? It's like an investor deciding, do I want to buy this particular stock or somebody? Is this a good fund?
Yeah,
they get under the hood. They do all their diligence, right? And then they give it a bad rating, I guess, a bad credit rating, you know? And then it's suddenly, oh, crap, you're in trouble. They've taken a look. There must be something fundamentally wrong. That would be, like, the biggest thing. As much as we give Rodgers a little bit of a hard time for being all about himself and wanting to stay in the headlines, I do think he's smart enough to know what, like, the bones of a good football team look like and the bones of a good offense
Okay, by that logic, then he won't come here. Unless he is...
like badly enough wants to play for the money that they are going to pay him that he just says, ah, screw
it. But Chris, if he was desperate and he did badly want to do it, he probably would have signed by now. Right?
Well, I mean, desperate in the sense that he finds out that nobody else like has an injured quarterback who like hurts his knee rehab, you know, hurts his knee doing off-season drills by themselves. He's still, I think, waiting for what he would consider a better situation to open.
The Pirates actually won a game, which was good. And I don't want the following to be turned into any grand proclamations I'm trying to make, because I'm not. I just think over the past couple days, there have been some things that I've liked, that I've seen with this ball club. And I'm going to go over them one by one, and I want you guys to react to this. Would you please?
Yes.
Number one, the willingness to sort of cut bait with David Bednar. Now, I know he shouldn't have been the guy going into the season. I get that. But at least they didn't wait around any longer. At least they finally cut bait and said, no, we're not even going to have you in the bullpen. Go work on stuff. You have to leave now. I like that. It gave them a chance to move on and reconfigure their bullpen. That was a good move. Bob?
Yeah, I think it was a good move because it had to be done. I mean, if you're really serious about trying to do whatever it is you're doing, you can't allow a guy who's struggling to continually be out there because you just throw him out there.
Yeah, this isn't audition time.
No. They gave him money in arbitration, but he's not living up to it, so he has to go down. And I think it's going to be a longer stay down there for him, not a shorter one. I think he has to really figure this out. But it also depends on what they have in their bullpen now, and that still is a little bit of a problem. They have an overabundance of left-handers. You know, Dennis Santana looks like the only guy, because I'm not going to put Holderman in that role yet, the way he struggled.
Well, I'm going to get to that in a moment, the rest of the bullpen. Limits, are you with me on Bednar?
I am. It's obviously a tough move just because of the emotional connection that the city has and the team has with Bednar, but definitely the right move. I'm glad that they acted so swiftly on it, only five games in, and they didn't let it linger like they did last year before they ultimately moved him off as a closer.
Yeah.
Right move, good time.
No lingering. No lingering. And you know what? Honestly, based on performance, I think the emotional attachment to Bednar was zero factor for almost anybody. I didn't see one person anywhere in any venue or social media on the street anywhere else say, wow, you can't do that to that guy. There was none of that.
No, there really wasn't.
Number two of the five things I liked that the Pirates have done or that's happening. I liked the guys coming out of the bullpen yesterday. Borecki had the biggest out of the game, a strikeout, and Santana. Now, Shelty wouldn't commit to him as a closer, but I like his demeanor. I like his stuff. I liked what the bullpen did, and I'm somewhat optimistic, even though, Bob, you mentioned probably an overabundance of lefties. But certainly yesterday, I liked the stuff, and I wouldn't mind seeing Majinski go back to a bullpen role either.
That's a good call. That's what I would do. I would bring up somebody else. I think Harrington still could be that guy. You know, he was a little nervous the first time out. I'd rather see Majinski in that eighth inning, seventh inning role, because he has enough in his arm that can get you through three outs if you need it. The longer he goes as a starter, I think you're going to find that it gets more difficult for him.
Twinning streak?
I'm honestly kind of surprised they have not already demoted Harrington and that he's a twinning streak.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they haven't demoted him back to AAA and called up a reliever to where that is, Majinski to the bullpen, especially with Bednar. They're currently down, I think, one reliever in that pen, going with six starters.
Yeah.
I do like Borecki. I like him more in like a swingman role because he's kind of the Jared Hughes type of get you out of jam guy.
It's a hell of a pitch.
Yeah, he's a good player compared to an eighth inning guy. But right now, situationally, how they have it, have no idea who's going to pitch the seventh. But I do like Borecki and Santana there.
Well, I think it's going to be some combination of Holderman, Borecki, and Santana, don't you? And Ferguson's been pretty good too.
It's probably Ferguson has been really good. Meza, not so much. I mean, they don't really want to use Joey Wentz that much. I mean, they've used him, what, once or
twice? I'd rather use Carson Wentz, Bob. This is encouraging. Number three is Alexander Canario. I mean, this is the type of guy that, believe me, this does not make up for Ben Charrington's, you know, dormant, sleepwalking, inexcusable offseason. But this is the kind of move you need to make. This kid has really good numbers. He's young. He seems like at least a potential power hitter. I would certainly prefer someone who's already good and proven and in their prime. But failing that, and they certainly do fail that a lot in terms of acquisitions, this is at least the kind of player, the profile of a player that you would bring in. He has really good AAA numbers. He hits bunches of home runs. And he seems to be a promising prospect who just didn't have anywhere to go in his last organization.
Right.
I say good move, at least to find out.
And I say put him in left field and play. And why not? I mean, the way things have gone, Tommy Pham has struggled. And I know they'll defer to the fact he's a veteran and they paid him. But, you know, the best move Ben Charrington has made so far is coming up with Joey Bart after he was waived by San Francisco. Now, he was a number two overall pick. But this guy, Canario, is highly regarded, and he's 24. He got blocked. You know, he hit a grand slam against the Pirates in his first game back in 2023 in Chicago. He went to the Mets. He's been traded a couple of times, but he's been blocked everywhere he goes, it seems. Give him a chance.
I agree.
What do you have to lose
Nothing.
By that?
More games.
It reminds me, there's a guy from St. Louis, and this is a little bit different, but not. He was an international signing, and he had three home runs yesterday for them. Ivan Herrera for St. Louis Cardinals. He looks like every time he gets up there, he takes these massive swings, and when he connects, that Big Mac land out there in left field is under attack.
Remember Efren Herrera, the kicker, Bob,
yes,
with the mustache?
Yes.
He looked like Freddie Prinze, I remember, Efren Herrera. Tommy Fail is batting .087. I mean, what are we doing here?
What happened to We Are Family, Joe? Seems like the
turned.
Family is splitting apart. They need a little reunion.
You like this move, Limits?
Yeah, see, I do want to throw a little bit of a caution into the wind because he was DFA'd, and I mean, if the, nobody really got anything for him, they got him in a trade for what was it, cash considerations or something. But I will say he hit 37 home runs in the minors in 22,
yeah,
and 18 last year. So you didn't give up anything for him. I'm not saying it's going to end up like Joey Bart.
Me neither.
But why not? If your other option is Tommy Pham and Jack Sawinski striking out all the time, even though Sawinski's been, I think, okay compared to at least last year, I would play him.
What?
Yes, I'd give him a chance.
Sawinski stinks
compared
so
to last
far.
Year. Last year
mind?
He was horrible.
Limits. Let's go look his numbers up.
Let's
here.
Do it.
He struck out 7 of his last 8 at bats. Right?
Well, he drove in a couple runs.
He makes Tommy Pham look like Mickey Mantle. He's batting 158 with 9 strikeouts in 19 at bats.
He was only hitting about 120 in his final month with the Pirates last year. I'm not trying to make excuses here for Jack Sawinski in any regard. I would give Canario a chance and to play in the left. Give him like an extended 2 or 3 week stint. Why not? What else do you have to
I
lose?
I agree. And believe me, AAA is littered with, you know, hot hitters who will never make it, like Henry Davis. They say there's never been more of a gulf between AAA and the majors. I get all that. But you can't discount numbers and just say they won't translate until you actually see it. So good move. At least to find out what you got. That's number 3, Bob.
Yeah, I want to put him out there as soon as possible. Just play him.
See. Likewise. Has he been activated for this series, Limits?
Oh, no, he has still not been activated since the
I
deal.
I don't think he's in Pittsburgh yet. Is he having problems getting here, or is he here? I don't know where he is. They haven't really said so.
And they haven't demoted him down to AAA either. They've not made an official transaction with him. One other thing, because one outfielder in, one outfielder out, Josh Palacios, who ultimately was designated for assignment and opted for his release, is signing with the White Sox.
Thank you, Limits. The other thing, go ahead, Bob.
No, they gave him a chance. Why not Canario?
Yeah.
You know, same kind of player, maybe. Potentially there's something there.
Completely. Here's a big one for me. This is number 4 of things I've liked about the Pirates over the past 2 days, on and off the field. O'Neill Cruz. I think a lot of sins of the offseason could be wiped out if this guy turns into a star. I don't know that he will, but he is a year removed from that traumatic leg injury. He had an offseason to get ready. I thought he had 2 great at-bats yesterday, the opposite field homer. And then, you know, Bob Walk said it well, like right after that sack fly, the way he worked the count, kept the ball in play and drove in an insurance run. He said that was a really impressive at-bat, and I agree. He's got a 922 OPS early in the season. He's got almost as many walks as strikeouts. He leads the team in total bases. Like, what if we get the O'Neill Cruz that we've always wondered about, that people have dreamed of? What if we get a 30-40 home run guy, something like that, and a star? What if we get a star here? Man, stars make up for a lot. You win with stars in pro sports. I'm just wondering, Bob, I love what I saw yesterday, and I like the start he's off to.
He's got 5 stolen bases. He leads the majors in that. His play in the outfit has not stopped him from concentrating at the bat, so that's good.
His play's got to
get better, obviously, but he's still, you know, they're putting guys who've never really played different positions in those positions. You have to be somewhat patient. As long as the bat plays, I'm okay with his learning curve.
I was just going to say that, which is why I requested to interrupt you, Bob, which I apologize for.
But I agree
for.
With every syllable and half syllable I just said.
So do I. Is that he could also be living proof that if you hit, the other crap really doesn't matter.
Right.
He can
Especially
leave,
on this team.
He can leave his glove at the hotel. He can leave his glove in the car. And I've said the same thing about Henry Davis since he walked in here. Everybody worried about what position he can play. Hitter. That's why you draft a guy 1 overall so he smashes the baseball. I don't give a crap where Henry Davis plays. He can play DH every day. He can play a horse bleep right field. He can play a horse bleep first base. If you hit, if you become a star, if you become worthy of the number 1 overall pick, nobody cares. Did anybody care where Manny Ramirez played or how well he played? Who the hell cares? If you hit, you help your team win.
I still think, though, that O'Neill Cruz is going to win them a lot of games, but there's a good chance that he loses them a couple of games too. And I truly wonder with those plays that he made in center field during that Marlins series where he didn't hit the right cutoff man, the bullpen ended up blowing the lead, especially with a bullpen, at least at that time, that was struggling and needed every break that they could get.
I'll make that trade every single day of the week. Give me a star hitter. I really, really don't care that much about his fielding.
I do care about the fielding. Now, I'm not going to completely just throw it to the wayside and not consider it, but if he can be a 30-30 guy, then yeah, that significantly takes away some of those faults where you take a lot of those great things with some of the bad that just happens to come with it.
How about if he's a 40-40 guy? How about if he's a 40-40 guy?
Yeah, then you just shrug it off.
Then do you care about him missing a cutoff guy?
No, I care about him being able to read the ball properly in center field. Okay.
Then put him at DH. And make the move that way and put somebody else in center field.
I'd be fine with that.
They need star hitters. And if
that's
this
why I would have Henry Davis up right now and just say go for it for a little bit. Let's see what you can do. You've done it in AAA. McCutchen hasn't played in three games. I'm not sure why. Reynolds has an arm problem, apparently. So, I want to see guys up here and do their thing. And I want to give them an extended look at this point. And that would be Canario and Davis.
Now, for all I know, Cruz will go south at some point, right? Or will wind
up disappointing
us. I still
think he's going to end up with really good numbers offensively.
They need him to be a star slash maybe superstar. That's what they need from him. And it's possible. I'm saying. I'm encouraged by that start at the plate. I really am. And on the bases, like you mentioned. And the fifth thing, Bob, that I like over these past 48 hours or so, and how could you not, is Paul Skenes. This stud. Oh, my God. He allows two singles over seven innings, an unearned run, and he doesn't even think he pitched well. He has a 1.46 ERA through two games, and he's just ramping up. We could be looking at the greatest, and this is not hyperbole. I think this is just straightforward, like reasonable thinking. We could be looking at the greatest season ever by a Pirates pitcher. We could be looking at the Cy Young Award winner, and I feel like every time out, this dude is going to be a threat to throw a no-hitter. So that gives them, at least once every 5 days, maybe six, a real chance to not only win a ball game but have it be done in memorable fashion, Bob. This guy is ridiculous.
He's special, and that's why they needed to have done more in this offseason, and moving forward, they better do a lot more. If they're not going to give him a Jackson Merrill treatment, then they're going to have to figure out how to spend money around him and do it quickly, because I don't see many offensive bats coming up through their system. They need a lot of that to take advantage of him and them. The fact that he went yesterday and seemed to be unhappy with this, you look back at his first 25 major league games, he has the best ERA ever to start a season after 25 games of any pitcher, like 1.92, I think it is.
It's unreal.
He's going to give you a chance to win every single game he's out there.
Yes, he is. And I'm going to call multiple no-hitters this season. I'm serious
about
that.
That would be tough to bet that, but I can see what you're saying. He's going to take games deep into it, seventh, eighth innings with no hits.
So far in his career, he's 12-3 with a 1.92 ERA and 183 strikeouts in 145 innings. I just think it stands to reason
and that he's only 22.
That he's going to get better. He's going to get better. Like, the league punches back, that's true, but this guy is so smart that he already figured that out last year. Like, I think it took him one start to see that if I just try to pump 101 by these guys, even Ohtani, I think that game was a great lesson. He blew away Betts and Ohtani early, and it was legendary, but then Ohtani took him 900 feet, And there were other teams that hit his fastball. So what does he do? He counters with the splinker and with bunches of off-speed stuff, which for him is still about 92 miles an hour, and he won games with the off-speed stuff late in the year. And then he goes into the offseason and he knows they're going to counterpunch again. So he develops two new pitches. He's already at 22, a master out there, Bob.
He strikes me, and
he can go to the 102 when he needs to.
He strikes me as baseball's version of Sidney Crosby. Always looking to get better, even though he could say, I'm pretty good right now. No, he's not satisfied. He's going to, and he has that serious stoic look every time he's out there. He's all business. and he will try to completely get better every time he's out there. Learn from a mistake, adjust to the mistake, and make that mistake go away. He's got everything you would want except an offense, and that's what has to change.
Very interesting man to listen to as well, isn't he, after the games?
Yeah. Very insightful, deep diving into his own thoughts.
Yeah. Do we have some of that for next here, Limits? Some of these Skeens post-game?
Yes. We do have a clip on him with GQ Magazine.
Yeah.
What
like that
was like.
We'll do that next. We'll
I
hear
saw
from
that.
Skeens.
Could I add one thing that I take away as a really big positive for them right now?
Yes, sir.
They lead the majors, the Pirates do, in stolen bases by a lot. 19 stolen bases this year.
Which underscores their ineptitude hitting with runners in scoring position. With that many steals, you have immediately those guys are all in scoring position.
Yeah.
And they can't get hits. Or their batting average in those situations is not good. And I know it's six games, but it has to get better.
Especially because they have the third lowest slugging percentage in all of baseball at .278 so far this year, and they're only hitting .197 as a team.
Yeah. Again, don't get me wrong. I don't think they're very good. In fact, I think they're probably a last-place team. But when things happen that I agree with, or when things happen on the field that I like, those need to be pointed out too. And exactly. I think that Cruz is a big one. I do.
Well, he's going to be the catalyst, really, for this offense for right now.
They don't need him to be good.
I mean,
Reynolds
is?
They need
is?
Him to be great.
Reynolds, I don't think, can lift that level to where Cruz potentially can get.
I agree.
Now, if they both do it, that would be great.
Reynolds is what he is, a good player.
He's a good player.
And hopefully that'll show sooner rather than later. And unlike last year when the game still mattered, he wasn't hitting very well. He didn't really heat up until June of last year. It's got to happen earlier. I know he's struggling with an injury, but that apparently is not affecting him at the plate. That's why he DH'd, right?
Yes.
Cruz will be a 30-30 guy this year. I'm confident enough to say it.
Yeah. Is that good enough?
For what? Good enough for what?
I mean, I'm hoping he can be a 40 home run
I think
run
in
guy.
Time he
I'm
might
hoping
be.
He can
think,
have a,
I'll
he
take
can
30
have,
right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to. 40's a lot.
He has six steals in six games.
Well, I guess it depends on what else happens. Yeah, the steals are nice, but like Bob said, if nobody's there to drive you in, they don't really matter. Like, let's see what else he does at the plate. I'll take 30 homers if he's got an OPS near 1,000. Then we're talking.
Yeah.
It's not all about homers. But, man, all I'm saying is they need him to be a star. And this might be the year.
Well, it's time. He has to. You have to show that sign if he's going to be one. This year would be it. He and Ellie De La Cruz are two guys that have often been compared. But he plays shortstop, and he's still not the best shortstop, Ellie De La Cruz. But, boy, that bat comes to life. To your point earlier, Joe, if you can hit, you could find me. I'm not going to really overreact to defense. If you can hit the kind of home runs and the kind of numbers that I'm looking at, I'll settle for average defense.
I mean, history is littered with guys. I mentioned Manny Ramirez. I could rattle off 30 more that nobody cared about their defense. You know, they hit. Hitting's the name of the game. All right, Bob. Let's hear from Paul Skeens next. And also, there's a shipment of torpedo bats on the way here.
How about that?
Man, can
torpedo
the Pirates
bats
use
to
those?
Pirates. Yeah, baby, let's go.
I think it depends on what team you have. If you have a team that you can have pieces around them, strong running game. If you're a San Francisco 49ers and you don't have Brock Purdy a couple years ago, then you get when you have Ayuk, Deebo Samuels, McCaffrey, you got a defense, perfect place for Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And that might be a nice comparison. A Brock Purdy type guy, a guy that you can win with, but when he has to put the barrel of the bat on his shoulders and try to call his shot, I don't know if he's there yet. I don't know if he has that arm strength. And another thing that really concerns me is his release. It's a wind up kind of slow release, and in the pros, those windows are really short and not a lot smaller than in the college game. So they could close on those balls. So I would have liked to seen him throw live to see that arm strength. And if that delivery, he could speed that up. But I think he's going to be a solid pro. I went in there and I didn't want to like him because everybody else did. And I like to be a contrarian every once in a while. But I'll say this. I like him better than Shedeur Sanders.
Ooh. What if he's Brock Purdy?
Purdy.
Purdy. Doug Whaley talking about Jackson Dart. Everyone has fallen in love with this guy, at least insofar as he's been mocked to the Steelers a ton in the first round. He's getting a lot of attention right now as a potential first-round quarterback. Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Fan Morning.
Stop what you're doing! Oh, hail to Pitt. It's Pat Bostick.
I forgot we had the Bostick bit in whatever. Anytime he walks in, even if we're in the middle of something, Callis is going to hit that. That scared the ever-loving hell out of me.
You got shot. I swear, last week, whenever you were out, same thing happened to me. I was like, I thought the building blew up.
My mic goes off. I thought Callis was doing his thing, but usually he only does that whenever I'm being a jackass to him. Mic goes out. Then I thought there was going to be a weather alert because the storms apparently are bad out there. Holy cow.
Yeah, it got me too last week. I was like, oh my gosh.
That was Monday.
That was Monday.
What? That was this week, Doran.
What? Man, I'm getting my weeks messed up.
But you were fine. Like, you were stoic. He was in convulsions right there.
I'm awake now.
You look like you got...
That was my third cup of coffee. Holy crap. I think I keep track of the bits we got going on around here. Good morning to you, Bostick. How you doing, buddy?
Better now.
Woo, is it storming bad out there?
It's slowed down. A little windy. Definitely ponding water here and there.
Ponding water?
Seriously. Yeah.
What's the acronym for flooding? It's like stop, turn around, don't stop. I think it's don't stop. I'm going to stop because here's what I'm going to get people hurt. I think you're supposed to turn around.
Hey, there's a puddle of water on the parkway. It's bumper to bumper traffic. Stop, turn around. Go opposite around. Traffic.
I did see that there were...
Sir, you're driving the wrong direction. Crowley told me to do it. I had a radio, so there was a big alert, and then he told me to turn around.
There were tornado warnings in Morgantown, I think Westmoreland County as well. And if one should happen to befall us here in Allegheny County, we are going to get to the lowest level of building here, and the show's going to have to cease. Because that's what the weather experts tell us to do, and I always heed their warning. All right, I have no idea what I was saying before.
The Steelers are going to take someone 21st overall.
That's right.
Whaley was on it.
Thank you, Pat.
Welcome.
Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. So Doug Whaley says that Jackson Dart is solid, and he's the guy that you can win with, but not a guy necessarily that you win because of. And he kind of likened him to Bo Nix a little bit. And I just wonder if, and everyone's got different evaluations of guys, but if that is what Jackson Dart is, a guy you can win with, but not a guy you can win because of, is that the kind of guy you take in the first round?
I mean, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think right now he might be that. And Denver won a lot of games because of Bo Nix last year.
Yeah, I think Doug was saying rookie year. I think he was trying to say you can't win because of Jackson Dart this coming year, but probably eventually, yeah, you can. But I think he's talking about specifically rookie year, like Bo Nix.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the best. I think he's the best prospect of any of the quarterbacks in the draft right now.
What?
I do. Yeah, I
better
think,
than Ward?
I do. Yeah, I actually do. Huh. You guys know who Nate Tice is?
Sure.
Yeah.
So he's actually a GA at Pitt under Paul Chryst. His dad, obviously, Mike Tice.
Have you ever
seen the pressure percentage? Quarterbacks under pressure, completion percentage, big plays. Dart is like far and away the best quarterback. And he's playing in the SEC. That, to me, is a big distinction. When you come to playing under pressure, duress, athleticism, all the things combined.
Sanders got to be last or one of the least in that.
Yeah, category. I mean, in terms of questions answered, he answers the most questions, in my opinion, Dart. And I'd be really intrigued about him sitting behind Rodgers for a year. I would. Because I think early career-wise, he may not have the arm talent that Rodgers had early in his career, but mobility, extending plays, like lower body strength, ability to shed tacklers, like he's got it. I've been on the Dart train, and I still am. I think it'd be a solid, safe pick at 21 that you can develop for a year and has all the tools to be really good.
See, and albeit for me to disagree with you, and I'm not even going to pretend like I've watched a ton of Jackson Dart tape. I've watched Jackson Dart highlights. I did this with Malik Willis. I do this with all the prospects. Oh, look at the highlights. And they all look good to me. Like, okay, I can
highlights
see.
Are easy.
They are very easy.
Hi.
Lights. Safe pick. I don't like that. I get it, and I get why teams would value that, and I think it's an organizational philosophy thing and a personal philosophy thing. For me, I want the home run. I don't want the double off the wall.
Yeah, I think he can. I think his floor is significantly higher than the rest of them. His ceiling may be just as high. Like he's. I mean, I got no qualms to say he's more much more talented than Kenny Pickett in terms of just raw athleticism, arm strength. He's more talented than Kenny. But they have similar makeups, background in terms of, you know, they played a lot of football. They've been through it. They've had highs. They've had lows. He's the best deep ball thrower in the draft. That's statistically and otherwise. And he's the best under pressure. And that was my one question about Kenny coming out of college was the punch, pivot, reverse out, right. Scramble. Dart hangs in there, man. And when you play in that league, in the NFL, you're going to get hit. There's going to be bullets whizzing by your head. You got to be ready to play. And the SEC is as close to that as you're going to get. And he played in it for 4 years.
So you're saying if Callis hit that drop and he was hosting the show, he'd be unflappable. He would just be hanging in there.
Yeah, he'd be more like Doran than you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why weren't we talking about Jackson Dart in November like this?
Because I think a lot of people say that he's just a Lane Kiffin product. And, you know, when you really – I think it's easy to cast him off as a system guy. Until you actually watch it, until you see the scramble ability, which is better than I even thought.
1,600 rushing yards in his collegiate career.
I mean, it's not insignificant. And then you watch the actual throw. I mean, they demand a lot from you in that system. And there's a lot of sideline deep balls. You imagine, I mean, I want a guy that can throw a deep ball coming into this offense with DK Metcalf and George Pickens for the next however many years if George is still here. I want a guy that can throw the deep ball. And I know Mason Rudolph can, but Mason can't move. This guy can also move. He checks all the boxes that you've heard them say, and he checks the character box.
Well,
that's a big one.
Obvious follow-up question would be, do you believe in him so much that you would think he's worth trading up to get? Or is he just the guy that if he's there, if there's a run on tackles, if there's a run on defensive line, whatever, if he's there at 21, you take him?
Yeah, my philosophy would probably, just to throw it out there, would probably be to stay at 21, and if he's not there, go over D-line. That would be what I would do. I would not touch running back with a 10-foot pole in the first round, but that's me.
We'll get to that, too.
But, I mean, I like Dart the best of the quarterbacks in the draft. Ward is probably like 1B. But he's not, I almost don't even rank him because he's not in play for the Steelers.
Right.
He's just not.
Right.
Like, I shouldn't say Dart is he's not like far and away better than Ward. I think he might project better than Ward, quite frankly, but he's just not in play for the Steelers, so I'm not sure it's applicable to talk about him in this setting.
Ward was my favorite quarterback to watch last year because he does some crazy bad stuff, and Miami would be in these massive holes, like against Cal. I mean, they were way behind, and then he just does the superhuman to get them out of it. And if you could find a way to limit the one while continuing to accentuate the greatness, I mean, that's the job, I guess.
Jameis Winston.
Correct.
He's going to go to a bad situation.
Yeah.
And that's what you get concerned with a guy that has habits like that, is it's either going to be like ungodly good or terrible. Because he's either going to save a team or he's going to sink them further into oblivion.
Yeah. If you think about the first three picks, if you're Cam Ward and you got the pick, like it's definitely New York, right?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Like you want to throw to Neighbors. Like Neighbors is a volume receiver. Like you look up every single week. I mean, he'll have 6-7 catches and he's just very consistent. Like you want to grow with that guy. If you go to the Titans, man.
Who you got? I mean, Tyler Boyd?
Yeah. Is he still there? I mean, Calvin Ridley. I mean, you could squint. But, like, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go to the Titans. I don't want to go to the Browns.
I know they've made some moves up front, but you're also going to get killed.
Yes.
There. So, yeah, I mean, to put a bow on it, I'd be fine with Dart at 21. It would excite me.
Should I do the pony thing and tweet that? I'd be fine with Dart at 21. It would excite me. - Pat Bostic. Tweet that out.
Yeah, that's fine.
Bang.
I'd be more than fine with that, actually, if you want to go ahead and put that.
More than fine?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, wait, now I'm going to pause like 3 seconds here. Any more addendums?
No. The other addendum is, like, everyone's saying next year's class is so good. Like, show me.
Right.
Like, absolutely show me. And I just don't see it right now. I see like major upside, but most of these guys haven't played much or done anything.
The more I've heard you say that, and you've been
like the only
that,
one saying it.
Correct.
Yes.
The more I buy into it too, man.
Same here.
You just never.
There's a lot of potential.
No, correct.
But you don't know.
Right.
You don't know how it's going to pan out.
That's an easy thing to say when like there's not someone to fall in love with in the current class. But as you go on and you follow or all the quarterback experts, Orlovsky, Todd McShay, Dart is rising to the top by the day. My opinion was formulated prior to that, but as we go forward here, and I don't think it's any coincidence that it's following the combine, following the Senior Bowl, they're getting nuggets from teams that have interviewed these quarterbacks, that have worked them out, that have talked to them, saying, this guy's different, this guy's different. We feel more comfortable with him because there's flaws with the other ones. And I think that's what's holding this class back. And he has a chance to rise to the top. Now, is it going to be a day one starter? Probably not.
And that's okay.
That's probably
good.
Better.
Yes, yeah, that's good.
I mean, unless you're, and I know I wasn't huge high on last year's class, but unless you're, I don't think anyone thought Bo Nix was going to light the world on fire in Denver. Went to a good situation and it worked out. And then Jaden Daniels in Washington, unless you're those two guys, like show me a guy that's gone in and I mean, look at Caleb Williams. It was downright hard to watch at times. And there were really bright spots. So it's hard to handicap these things, but at 21, I think that's a really good spot for him to go.
Texters are all saying about the flooding thing, it's a turn around, don't drown. TAD is what it is. It will be the acronym.
Turn around, don't drown.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like puddles out there. I shouldn't say ponding. There's not like a tidal wave coming.
We're puddling.
There's not a tidal wave coming through the Fort Pitt Tunnel right now.
So Pat Bostic says he would be titillated at the prospect of Jackson Dart falling to the Steelers at 21.
Go
would
ahead.
You? 412-928-9370, the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We could talk to you about that. Also, some other draft hypotheticals. We spent so much time on Rodgers. I'd like to table that a little bit unless there's breaking news today. So more draft. Who could be there when the Steelers pick 21st overall? Who would be worthy of that pick? Texter, kind of sad that listeners care more about who the Steelers will draft 21st overall than Sid breaking a record held by Wayne Gretzky. That happened days ago.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That's what I responded to the texter, and they said, point stands. Guy's been the face of the league for 20 years, deserves more appreciation by Pittsburgh sports fans. We appreciate him. Should we talk about Andrew McCutchen's 800th extra base hit from Sunday? Should we be doing that right now on Thursday? I mean, come on.
Already done.
We talked about Sid. We love Sid. Sid's the best. But it happened days ago. So I hope that helps. You can text us and have me be irritated at you at 412-928-9370. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We've been talking about the merits of Jackson Dart potentially at 21 for the Steelers. We want your thoughts, 412-928-9370. How about some other hypotheticals, friends? Doran, you brought up Tyler Warren yesterday with Doug Whaley. And I had friends texting and saying that it was an idiotic idea. Not because it was you or anything like that, but because they have to
trade up.
They need defensive line. Well, we're talking hypothetically if guys fell. Mm-hmm. And actually, Doran asked the question, like,
if he was fell to 15,
you know, if
16.
He's fallen, right? Like, do you consider moving up for the guy? Listen, you never know what's going to be there. You just don't. They didn't think that there was a chance in hell that David DeCastro was going to be there when they drafted David DeCastro. And the guy becomes a Hall of Fame, at least adjacent player. Like, guys fall. Aaron Rodgers fell.
Yes.
So if Tyler Warren's there at 21, like I think now because they have Metcalf, I am erring on the side of defensive line. It's the one position they didn't really address this offseason, and they need help there. Their best player is 35 years old. But if Tyler Warren's there, I don't know how, at very worst, you don't go, I mean, best player available.
I don't even blink. I'm running that thing to the I'm calling. I mean, as soon as I see that we're up, before we're up and he's there, I'm calling it in.
See, I'm happy you did the thing you just did there.
At 21.
People are always like, oh, yeah, you run to the podium. No, calling's faster. That's always the same. Oh, you got to run to the podium. No, you could just call it in.
Yeah, you call it in.
You send a little text.
You absolutely take him. There's no way on God's green earth he's going to be there.
I don't think he's going to be there
either. He might be the best, most impactful player other than Abdul Carter, who's his teammate on day one in the draft.
Yeah, transforming player. Like, he transformed your offense.
If he's there,
God, yeah, it's done.
But I'm saying, like, if he's like, okay, it's 15 coming around, and he slips to 15, 14, would you trade up to get him?
I'm waiting around for my defensive lineman.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think they have nothing in the second round. You're going to trade your third round pick? I mean, they're not going to take
from next year.
Yeah, I mean,
you could dip into next year's. Yeah,
dip in next year because you have the compensatory picks to kind of replenish.
Isn't good for talk radio, I guess. Like, I'm just sitting around waiting at 21 and taking the best D lineman available. But if they trade it up to like 16, 17, if Warren's there and they take him, like, I'm not going to cry about it.
Yeah,
I'd be elated.
Yeah, I mean, they've got 38 tight ends too on the roster right now.
What's one more, baby?
Cut every single one of them except for Pat.
Because he's a weapon, right? I mean,
I would not cut Darnell Washington.
Oh, yeah, except for Darnell and Pat.
You do not cut Darnell Washington. I don't think it'd have to get to like 17, 18. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, there's a chance here for me to move because there's so many other holes they have to fill. And I know he's a great player, but I just get heart palpitations seeing running back at 21 by two mocks right now.
Well, I want to get into that too.
I mean,
you've been all over that for weeks now, Dorn.
Yep.
But it makes a lot of sense given the fact that they haven't made a move outside of Jalen Warren.
Gainwell.
Well, they got Gainwell, right, but how they want to play.
Right.
And both those backs, Genty and Hampton, are bigger, more physical backs. Yeah, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't hate it at a 10, but I like D-line a lot more. But who knows? You think you learned your lesson.
Well, you think you learned a lesson at quarterback, too, then. So, I mean, that falls to the Jackson dart.
Yeah, but people take quarterbacks in the first round every single year. Like, and they, a lot of times they work, like, running back is, the value's not there.
I think it's switching a little bit. I think it's starting to
because
come back around.
Because of Saquon Barkley?
Jahmyr Gibbs?
Bijan Robinson?
Yeah, but they're not.
Derrick Henry?
They don't have the impact of a quarterback.
Second round.
They don't have the impact of a quarterback.
And the draft is so deep at running back.
Gosh, I mean, there's guys in the NFL.
Who's more valuable, Jahmyr Gibbs or Jared Goff?
Jared Goff.
Jahmyr Gibbs.
No.
Get out of here.
You guys,
getting all the touchdowns.
You guys are trying to tell me that you don't think you could plug and play any quarterback in the NFL in the Detroit Lions offensive system of last year.
You don't think you could do the same with Jahmyr Gibbs behind that offensive line?
I don't think that anybody could just give Jahmyr Gibbs production that he gave. Not any type of running back. You think Jalen Warren would have done what Jahmyr Gibbs did last year in Detroit?
All I know is before Montgomery got hurt, he was getting all the touchdowns.
No, he wasn't.
And they were obliterated with injuries, and Goff still played incredibly well.
5 picks in a game.
Oh, so
did
what?
Peyton Manning.
Oh, so we're comparing Goff to Peyton Manning.
You take a running back at 21.
Dave Montgomery had 12 touchdowns.
You think that's a good pick?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I think it's a terrible pick.
The type of running back, yes. For what you need and what you want to do on offense and becoming explosive. I mean,
get Travion Henderson in the third round. Who's going to play D-line? Like, that's my thing. Like, who the hell's going to play D-line?
Larry Ogunjobi's gone.
Why does my voice keep getting high?
They've got no depth inside on the D-line. And their last game they played, they gave up 200 and some odd yards rushing.
299, yeah.
And your best run-stopping linebacker is no longer here, too, by the way.
Dorn, I don't necessarily I've always been anti-draft running back in the first round.
I don't despise it either.
Type of running back. Like, if there's a run, if Genty or Hampton is there, I think you draft. But if anybody else, like,
one of them will be there.
If they're gone, then no, in my opinion. But if they're there, yes.
If I have Hampton or Kenneth Grant,
when there's 40,
I'm taking Kenneth Grant.
If there's 40 draftable running backs in this class, I can't take one in the first round. I can't. And I'll tell you, if defensive line, if they had a second round pick, I'd be more amenable to anything in the first round because the defensive linemen are so deep too. Right. But by the time, like now I'm driving a third round D lineman.
They're going to trade and they're going to get back in the second round.
I think they're going to try. I think it might cost them their first round pick though.
Of next year?
This year. I think they might trade back.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do they get a second round pick?
Like, next year's picks?
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do that because they're going to be looking for a quarterback next year. And they're going to move up and get that guy.
Maybe.
Unless they take the dart, man. That's what they called me in college. You can tweet us, brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. More draft-related stuff, but also Paul Skeens, gentlemen, he's just like us. Why? We'll tell you next.
Hey, you're always well-dressed, but we didn't know we were talking to a GQ model today. What's that all about?
Yeah. Jeez. I don't know. I'm gonna get some flack in the locker room. I know that. I'm not looking forward to that. I didn't know what GQ was until the offer came. So glad I did it. I think. I mean, how'd I look? You guys think I look good? Yeah, sweet.
Livy and Rue look better, I think, but you did okay.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, that's what she does. So, yeah. It was fun. It was very fun. It was on the one day. In like a million years that it snowed in Baton Rouge, so it kind of worked out perfectly. We got some sweet pictures, but that is not my sphere. Yeah, maybe I don't know. We'll see if I do more of those. But it was a fun day.
Paul Skeens talking about being in GQ with Livy Dunn, and I don't know. Do I want to call BS on our guy, Paul Skeens?
He knew. Yes. He knows who GQ is.
Yes.
What GQ is.
How do you not know what GQ is?
Also, I think he's going to catch some flack from Livy. He's a pretty good gymnast, too. He's like, that's what she does. That's all she does.
He might catch some flack for that. You're right.
He knew what GQ was. He also got paid.
Oh, yeah. The reason I say...
Is GQ big? Like we knew. Like, it was big whenever we were growing up.
Yes.
Like, you knew what GQ was because it was, like, the only thing. Now there's so many other outlets. Maybe he didn't know what it was.
That's a good question because my immediate response naturally is, oh, yeah, but I don't know. Are we doing the magazine thing big time these days?
I didn't know it was a thing.
That's not shocking.
Well, you didn't know that Pitt's in the ACC.
Didn't know Pitt was in the ACC.
I know you did.
Pat.
Let it go.
I'm just kidding.
Pat.
Let it go.
I mean, GQ has 1.3 million followers on Twitter. That's not a lot, actually.
No.
We need to do producer GQ around here. You get Bechtold in his baggy ball shorts. You get Joel Nelson in his Penn State t-shirt, his long hair, and his backwards cap. Who's the best dressed of all the producers? I mean, Donnie's svelte. He's got the beard. He's looking good right now. He wears good things.
I don't know if it's best dressed, but like he has good material.
He's had a girlfriend the longest.
Yeah.
I think that has something to do with it. Callis, in a couple of months, he could be walking in here looking like an Adonis because he's got a girlfriend who can help dress him.
Best dressed, that is a tough.
Sean Myers, he always looks professional.
Bechtold.
I don't know.
No, I think he might be last.
Yeah, Bechtold will be wearing.
He wore AM1 shorts the other day.
And you know what it is?
That's a value pick.
He'll wear like a Michigan State Spartans green shirt and then North Carolina blue shorts. Like nothing ever matches. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm some sort of like fashion expert, but we're making fun of them right now. We might need to do this. We might need to get Ben Tenuto on this. A little GQ fashion
shoot. That guy's good dress. Well dressed.
Yes.
Yes.
He's a good dresser.
And he's got the Riz.
Yes.
As the kids say. My phone is blowing up right now. Thought it was going to be Bechtold bitching about us ripping his fashion sense. I've also not seen any of these guys, apart from like hanging out at bars or at work. And we have a very weird job. So the people walk in here, you're wearing sports clothes, wearing hoodies, you're wearing shorts. So I don't know what they look like in their everyday. Like when they're trying to impress a lady, like are they?
Yeah.
I don't know. But all of us are like, at least I think, are like Paul Skeens in that, not that we've been in GQ, but we've all had to go through these like family photo shoots, right?
Oh yeah.
Where you don't want to be there, right. And you're trying to get the dog to look and the baby to look and your 5-year-old to look, and you're just like,
you're gonna call BS on this. I have not. We've not done family photos.
No.
No.
I don't.
Well, I lie. We did it at the beach one time. It was horrible.
Did you all wear white?
We all had,
that's the thing. Everyone wears white at the beach.
I was so miffed. Because I'm like, I just don't want to do this right now.
You're sweaty.
Oh, it was hot out. The kids were like not having it. And, you know, my brother-in-law is like a professional photographer, so he had it all set up. And, like, you have to pause because it's like a remote, you know, countdown.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's tough. Man. That's tough.
It's a long afternoon.
So we did do it. We haven't done, like, professional, like, pay for them, have to go do it.
We've done it for each kid on their, when they were born. We've done it for each kid on their first birthday. We did it for my five-year-old when she turned five. Big picture family. Mm. Actually, my family and I, we did it when I was growing up, and we all wore, my God, white turtlenecks, and then with jeans, barefoot, because of course, looked like we're in a friggin' cult.
A young mountaineer.
Awful. And then there was another same photo shoot where we wore all that same stuff, and then we each wore matching leather jackets.
This sounds just so 90s.
Yeah, it was. It is 90s.
Late and 90s.
And we had nothing to do with this. It hung up in the lobby of our doctor's office for like 14 years.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
It's like, all right, everybody, come on in. Get your throat swabbed. Here are the whites.
You have these? You still have the pictures? You got to share those.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sharing
them. Were you guys overall kids? Like, wear overalls when you were kids?
My daughter wore overalls yesterday.
I was a big overalls kid. My mom dressed me like I was.
Were you chopping wood in the backyard?
No, my mom, big turtleneck, big side part. Like, it was.
Oh, I had the side part,
too.
Were you a bowl
cut? You have a bowl cut?
Of course I did.
Doran's going to be like, why didn't you ask me if I had a bowl cut?
Yep. I didn't. I did not.
Bowl cut. Oh, man. Whoever thought that that was a good idea?
There are going to be things that we're wearing and doing right now they're going to look back on 20 years and go, why the hell did they do that?
I look at pictures of us when we were in college. We were wild dressing. Like, we were, like, everything was baggy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Real baggy.
It's wild looking.
Remember the Adidas Velour jumpsuit from...
oh, my gosh. What bowl game was that?
From the Sun Bowl.
Oh.
It's fitting that we had a Velour jumpsuit and lost 3-0.
Literally the worst bowl game in history of bowl games.
That's a blue-collar bowl game and not necessarily a blue-collar jumpsuit.
Speaking of, like, 90s, your thoughts on Val Kilmer?
We talked about it yesterday. So Crowley asked who was the best Batman because Val Kilmer was Batman. I think he had a great career, but...
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
He was great as Doc Holliday.
Great.
Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Real genius.
That caught me off guard. I didn't realize he was as sick as he was.
What got him the sickness?
He was real sick in the new Top Gun. Like they have minutes. Yeah.
I didn't know.
You said you saw the new Top Gun. He's in it.
No, I know that. I didn't know he was sick.
He cancer.
He looked sick in the new Top Gun.
He's old-ish.
65.
He's the same age as Tom Cruise.
Look at how I'm aging. What do you think I'm going to look like at 65? I don't go to the movies and go, oh, that guy looks sick. Except for, what was the one that Christian Bale was in? That guy looked sick. I think he did it on purpose.
He did. He lost a bunch of weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was that an American something or other? Hustle?
Yeah.
What?
What's the one where he had, where he's sick? I don't want to start.
This is the segment every Thursday where we just.
Usually we wait till 8 o'clock, but I have big things planned. That actually, something you brought up in an earlier break.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's going to be very fun. What we're going to do. We're also going to quiz Callis at 8:50. What happens next on the show? Your guess is as good as mine. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township. That movie title I was looking for is The Machinist? Is it The Machinist? I think it's Machinist with Christian Bale, where he's like 115 pounds.
We'll let you figure that out.
Well, either way, people get the gist where he lost all
is
that
it the
weight.
Masochist?
No.
How do you spell it?
Great word.
Machinist.
You still want the spelling?
No.
Those method actors are real weird to me. I mean, I get it. Like, you pour yourself into the role. I mean, I respect it. But, man, that is dedication.
Have you ever seen the documentary I Am Andy, I think it's called, whenever Jim Carrey is playing Andy Kaufman? In the one movie, and like he like went to the extreme. Like Andy Kaufman's family, like his mom, dad, sister, brother, they thought that Jim Carrey was Andy, and he obviously was dead. Like he was like that extreme, and like reenacting like scenes from his like life and stuff with like Jerry King Lawler. Like Jerry King almost fought Jim Carrey because he was acting like Andy too much. Like he thought he was Andy, and
and they almost fought in real life, and he almost fought Jim Carrey on the set. Like it's one of the craziest documentaries I've ever seen.
Actors are, I mean,
us thespians,
man. They're genius. You know what trips me out more than anything? Someone I know that has like a legitimate foreign accent that can just absolutely speak American or do the reverse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Perfectly.
Yes. Isn't the girl who's 11 in Stranger Things, isn't she British?
Yep.
So is the one who plays Siobhan in Succession.
Yeah.
Well,
she is.
Beth,
she's Australian.
Beth she's from, Australian.
Beth
yeah.
from Yellowstone.
Yeah.
She's British and like.
Crazy.
She's, you know, on a ranch in Montana.
Hold up. I said yeah like
Killian
I knew
Murphy.
That.
Killian Murphy.
But you're telling me Beth Dutton.
Yes.
Ain't American.
No.
Well, hot dog, that is some new information. That is an incredible talent.
It's incredible.
Because we're American. We talk Americanese, and I would not pick up on that at all.
No, it's really good.
Now, do you think it's just the lines, like you rehearse the lines so much that you...
I think it's just it's an easy language to kind of replicate.
It's our dialect.
Yeah, but to not have any, like, you can't even tell.
Can't tell.
Like, if you watch that show, you would never.
No, you just predict. Blew my mind.
You know what else is crazy?
Tell me.
Listen to, like, the Beatles or Led Zeppelin. You can't tell those guys when they're singing. Like, people that sing.
Right.
They don't sound British.
Mm-hmm. That's always been odd to me, too.
It's crazy. It's like the, you know, if you're speaking English and you sing, singing English sounds American to me. It's crazy.
Rolling Stones?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he does some stuff.
More with him.
He does some more, like, talking and stuff that you can hear. But, like, when you sing, like, you hear some of these, like, power ballad stuff, you can't tell.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Craziness.
It's a heck of a talent.
We cover it all here.
Yes, we do. How about Tom Holland?
Yes.
Spider-Man.
Yep.
Someone texted in.
And the other one, right? Andrew Garfield.
Yeah,
Spider-Man.
Both.
I think he's.
What are we doing here?
Can I get one more thing in about like TV shows? Have you started watching Mobland yet?
No, I did see the commercial.
Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
Are you
Tom
watching
Hardy?
Tom Hardy too? Yeah, heard it's great.
This is great. I love this stuff.
Noah Hiles thinks he's coming on at 8:35. I asked him to come on tomorrow at 8:35.
Is he staying at an Airbnb in Pittsburgh?
He's still in Florida for whatever reason.
I'd stay there too.
You think he came back with like a family of? Chickens, roosters,
a couple of hens.
Hens.
Hey, do you mind if I, sir? What's in your bag? I found them. They were knocking on my door in Little Havana.
Harry, why are you dressed like a chicken?
Yeah,
I understood that reference.
And there you have it, Pirates, a 4-2 winner. Chance for you to chime in with us here. Comment on it. How do you feel about the Pirates coming back to Pittsburgh for the home opener? Did watching or listening to Paul Skeens and seeing the greatness and brilliance of Paul Skeens, did it inject you with any life, with any hope, with any good vibes for the Pirates now? It's always a holiday in Pittsburgh, a sports holiday, the home opener. It's usually a day where people leave their complaints and criticisms of the Pirates to the wayside. And want to have fun and want to have a good time and call off from work and play hooky. And many of them drink their faces off and tailgate and things of that nature. So I think at least for a day on Friday, people will forget about that. But everyone's sober and clear-minded right now, you'd think. So I'm interested in hearing if people now, with the benefit of a Paul Skeens victory, his first of the year, feel any differently or any better about the overall situation hanging over the team. Because the worst case scenario for the Pirates this year would be if through a couple of starts here, it looked like the league, as Clint Hurdle used to say, was starting to punch back on Paul Skeens. If we had any evidence like, ooh, man, he'll be good, but it doesn't look like he's going to be the best pitcher in baseball this year. And if he's anything less than that, well, then you're really... in deep doo-doo.
So kind of the way they punched back at Jared Jones after a pretty electric start last year, where he started to taper off.
Sure. I mean, that's a good example.
I think when you're talking about Skeens, you're talking about probably prime Muhammad Ali at this point. I don't think there's a lot of... I think there's always
prime Muhammad Ali.
I think there's always an answer for the question.
I know I made a boxing reference by using the punching thing, but I mean, do you feel like we're dealing with like a prime Tiger, a prime?
I think Tiger,
Michael Jordan, a prime.
To whatever extent pitching
Patrick
is,
Mahomes, like all of those guys, like that's what we're dealing with.
To whatever extent pitching is like a true individual pursuit, you need your catcher, obviously, but the pitcher still, I mean, the truly great ones, Greg Maddux called his own games by how he caught the ball, for crying out loud, coming back to him. The Tiger one is not a bad analogy. I mean, he was playing against himself in the course, so it's always a little different. I mean, it would be like if the other golfers were trying to actively stop him from hitting shots, but the level of dominance, and I think the level, like the cerebral level here, is what is special. So I don't think there's a punchback. If you think Maddux is like maybe the most cerebral pitcher to have ever lived in the modern era, at least like a guy who was thinking 10 steps ahead, and then you'd say who was like an overwhelming stuff guy, Randy Johnson,
Clemens
is the other name I came to mind as a righty, Verlander even like at his best, DeGrom at his overwhelming best. I think Skeens really does meld both of those sides of the equation. And when you think a guy can do that at 22, for God's sake, and I will remind everybody, with very little, relatively speaking, formal pitching experience as far as wear and tear on the arm, he didn't come up through like travel ball or whatever pitching all the time as a kid.
No, he caught at Air Force.
Right. I mean, there are a lot of things here that suggest that while we all know he's not going to be a Pirate for life or even for a decade, they are probably going to get like 5 to 6 just outrageous years from this guy.
Well, I'm happy you brought up the Pirate for Life thing, because that'll be the argument that's heard inside of Judge Donnie's courtroom at 5:30 with the Jackson Merrill contract extension.
Wow, I'm actually getting to know what the argument is going to be.
Should the Pirates do the same thing with Paul Skeens? You'll be arguing for the affirmative, my friend. How do you like them apples?
I'm just amazed that I get to know Ballsy the Judge Donnie argument. More than 90 seconds before the segment starts.
Don't try to take people too inside the show to try to make excuses or rationalizations for why you typically lose Judge Donnie to me.
You know what? You handled your loss about germanium, an actual element, so gracefully yesterday. I'm going to take your advice, and I'm just going to pipe down. How do you feel, by the way, to answer your own question, because I like making you do this. You're asking people if they feel better heading into the home opener on Friday.
Slightly better. Slightly better, because I feel like every time he pitches, the Pirates should win. So I don't feel, I mean, I set the bar so low for them. I had 71 and 91. So I'm not going to, based on one of 162 games, say, guys, I completely changed my mind. I now see 85 wins. I'm not going to be the Jason Mackey, Dan Zangrilli, Sunshine and Rainbow Brigade. I'm not going to do that. I think that they're going to be a low 70s win team. And I need to see this bullpen get sorted out. My preference is to see the manager get told to take a hike. And I need some guys in their lineup outside of one day to put it together more consistently. This Brian Reynolds thing, which we got to the bottom of that. Brian Reynolds is DHing every day. And Andrew McCutchen's been out of the lineup because Brian Reynolds can't throw a baseball right now. So they want to keep his bat in. So he slots in at DH, and then that leaves McCutchen without a spot. Rob King on the TV side was watching it, was trying to like make the case. Well, you know, Andrew McCutchen's an older player, so that's why they're getting him off his feet. And Bob Walk was basically like, what are you talking about? He can't play the outfield for one day, which I thought was a good point. Like, McCutchen's that kind of broken down.
I was going to say, that would suggest like a level of physical fragility that is not bode well for the future.
You take his bat out of the lineup for 3 games, we got to see Ismael Valdez play first base yesterday because McCutchen can't play 1 game in the outfield? That's kind of alarming. I mean, that's not a great situation. So, you know, so that's like the other part of this. Like, yeah, I'm happy they won, but is Brian Reynolds... How long is Brian Reynolds going to need to be a full-time DH? Is he going to need to go like weeks playing there because he can't throw baseball? When is this tricep thing? I was doing some tricep extensions at the gym the other day and I'm sore. Like, is he just experiencing soreness like me?
Or definitely. It's definitely just like your tricep extension soreness.
You know, the you
Yes, I know what a tricep extension is.
You take that rope thing and then
you're doing a cable extension.
It's a cable extension, exactly.
Because there's the machine you can do, the old Nautilus,
mm-hmm.
that you can do. But the cable, much better because you've got a stabilized pony.